Again, I want to talk a little bit about Yom HaPesach. Obviously, that's coming up. And we know, of course, that the central mitzvah of Pesach, there are many mitzvahs, but one of the central mitzvahs is the mitzvah of Haggadah, the mitzvah of talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim, the night of the 15th of Nisan, the first Seder. And, of course, it is the 15th, and in Chutz La'aretz, because of Sveika D'Yoma, we do it two nights, but really the Chiyuv is one night. Now, we also know there's another mitzvah. There's a mitzvah every single day to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim, right? That's a mitzvah D'Oraisa. That is why we say the third paragraph of the Shema, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Asher Hotzeisi Eschem Me'eretz Mitzrayim. And even the Art Scroll has a note that when you say that verse, you should have kavana to fulfill the mitzvah d'oraisa of remembering the Exodus. That is a mitzvah that we must do every day and every night. That's an important thing because many women, maybe most women, do not daven Maariv, and as a result, they would not be saying the third paragraph of the Shema in the evening. But one should realize that even if one does not daven Maariv, and one does not say the Shema, one doesn't have to. I'm not talking about the first paragraph before you go to sleep. One should still be sure to say every night, as well as the day, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, or any other pasuk that talks about Hashem taking us out of Mitzrayim, because there is a mitzvah in the Torah that is independent of Shema. Women are exempt from Kriya Shema, but women are not exempt from the mitzvah that is called Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay, so the two mitzvahs that we're talking about is the mitzvah of Haggadah is called Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that's only one night a year. And the mitzvah of the entire year is called Zechira, remembrance, and that applies every morning and every night. And the difference is, as you would expect, Zechira just means mentioning it, Sipur means the entire narrative, and we'll talk about exactly what that involves. So here's the question. There's a passage of the Haggadah that everybody's familiar with, which actually doesn't seem to belong there at all. If you remember the statement, it says in the Haggadah, Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, that Elazar ben Azariah says, Hare ani keven shivim shana, behold, I am like a person that is 70 years old, and you recall the Gemara's interpretation, that actually he was only 18 years old, but he became a Nasi, he became the head of the Sanhedrin at the age of 18, because there was a lot of machlokes between the predecessors, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua. So they made him a Nasi to make shalom, and in order that people should respect him, miraculously his hair turned gray. Some say his hair turned gray because of the worry of his new position, which can sometimes happen. I think they say B'Shem the Ari in Amazing Thoughts. The Ari says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was a Gilgal, was a reincarnation of Shmuel HaNavi. Shmuel HaNavi died at the age of 52. So when Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was born, he was born with a 52-year-old neshama. So when he was 18 years old, his neshama was 70. That's what he says. Hare ani keven shivim shana. But be it as it may, what does he then go on and say? V'lo zachisi sheteyomer yetzias Mitzrayim balelos. I could not convince the Chachamim that they should mention the Exodus at night. I couldn't convince them. Ad shedorsha ben Zoma, until another rabbi, Ben Zoma, made a drasha, because it says, Laman tiskor es yom seischa me'eretz Mitzrayim kol yemei chayecha. You should remember the Exodus all the days of your life. It didn't have to say all, just say the days of your life. So if it would have said the days of your life, that would have meant only the daytime. All the days of your life even means the nights. And once Ben Zoma made this drasha, although there is another opinion that's presented, but the Mishnah is teaching me, once Ben Zoma made the drasha, that is why we mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at night. Now here is the problem. What mitzvah is that Mishnah talking about? That Mishnah is not talking about the Seder. What? Until Ben Zoma came along, people didn't have a Seder at night? People would do the Haggadah in the day? Of course not. That Mishnah is not talking about the Seder. That Mishnah is not talking about Haggadah. That Mishnah is not talking about Sipur. That Mishnah is a machlokas regarding the mitzvah that you have to do the entire year. The entire year, there is a mitzvah that is called Zechira. According to one view, the mitzvah of Zechira was only in the daytime because it says Yemei, and was not at night. Ben Zoma is Machadesh through his drasha that the mitzvah is to do it not only in the day, but also at night. In other words, according to the other opinion, you would not say the third paragraph of the Shema at night, because Sitches is not worn at night, and Yetzias Mitzrayim, there's no mitzvah to mention at night. Ben Zoma says, no, you got to say the third parsha of Shema even at night because of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But that machlokes is about Zechira. That machlokes has nothing to do with the night of Pesach. So why Bichlau is that Mishnah brought in that God? Now again, this is a very obvious question. I think a lot of people overlook. A lot of people read this passage and they think, oh, the Haggadah is proving you got to make a Seder at night. That's not true at all. That wasn't the question. The question is whether you have to recite the third paragraph of Shema at night in the course of the year. So question one about that Mishnah is, it's Mishnah Brachos, is what is the Shaychus, what is the connection of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah to the Haggadah Shel Pesach? That's one question. But there's another question that's a bit deeper. And the other question is, how come Zechira and Sipur have inconsistent and contradictory times? Meaning the following. The mitzvah of Sipur, of making a Seder, making a Haggadah, is only at night, and we don't do it on the day of Pesach. Meaning, the time of commemoration is the Dafka night. And yet, when it comes to Zechira, it's exactly the opposite. Everybody says it's a Dover Pasha if you do it during the day. And there's a machlokes if you do it at night. One says yes, one says no. We paskin you do. But with respect to Zechira, night is secondary to day. With respect to Sipur, not only is night primary, but night is exclusive. Right? There is no mitzvah of Haggadah, saying the Haggadah during the day. I mean, people have a custom, Shabbos Haggadah, all those are customs. But in terms of the chiyuv of the Torah, certain, absolutely, the chiyuv of the Torah to recite the Haggadah, or the narrative of Sipur, is only at night. So the two questions here are, number one, what is the relevance of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah to the Haggadah Bichlal, since they are discussing Zechira and not Sipur? And question number two is, why is it so that when it comes to Sipur, the Torah specifically directs you to do it at night and not in the day? When it comes to Zechira, the Iker is in fact the day. There are some opinions who would not even do it at night. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah has a drasha that we also do it at night, but the predominant mitzvah is daytime. So Zechira, the Iker mitzvah, is day, and night is secondary. Sipur, the entire mitzvah is night. Right? So you're moving in opposite directions between Zechira and Sipur. Yeah.
Can you give us the children that are the source of
The source of the mitzvah of Zechira the whole year is Laman, is actually quoted in the Haggadah itself, but it's Zechira. Laman tizkor es yom seischar me'eretz Mitzrayim, in order that you should remember the day that you were taken out of Egypt, kol yemei chayecha, all the days of your life. So the days of your life means every day, and the kol, the extra word kol, also includes the night. But that's Zechira. And the Chachamim disagree with that. The Chachamim say no. Kol just means when Mashiach comes, we'll talk about it, but not at night. Now, the mitzvah, that's the makor of the, that is the source of the mitzvah called Zechira. The source of the mitzvah that is called Sipur is Vihigadata Levincha Bayomahu Leimor, you shall tell your child, and that's why it's called Haggadah, Vihigadata Levincha, Bavor Zeh Asa Hashem Li, because of all that Hashem did for me when I was taken out of Mitzrayim, is why I am discussing the narrative. That is called the mitzvah of Haggadah or Sipur. Now, there is no machlokas at all that the mitzvah of Sibur is specifically at night. That's not a machlokas. Well, keep in mind, there's another passage in the Haggadah that addresses that. The Haggadah says, Yachol mibod yom, maybe we should do it in the day. The answer is no. Bavor zeh means, because of this, you're pointing to the matzah. And the matzah is eaten at night because the korban pesach is eaten at night. So, with all of those connections, in other words, it's a little complicated once you go through the Haggadah carefully, but that is the part of the Haggadah that proves the Seder is at night. Rav Elazar ben Azariah is not talking about when you make a Seder. There is another passage in the Haggadah, which is not even subject to a machlokas, that says that Haggadah got to be said at the time you eat the matzah, and the matzah got to be eaten when you eat the Korban Pesach, and the Korban Pesach is eaten at night, therefore the matzah is eaten at night, therefore the Haggadah is at night. And that is not a machlokas. See, that's a separate drasha. So the question is, isn't it so strange that we emphasize the night by the Haggadah, and we de-emphasize the night, Lagabe Zechira, where even though we do it at night, but that's a machlokas, and it's not of the same importance as the day. Right? So these are two questions. The first question is an easier question to answer, so let me just give you an answer for the first question. In other words, the first question is, why does the Haggadah want to show that there's a mitzvah of Zechira the whole night? See, and the answer is simple. Right before this, the Haggadah wanted to say, or did say, that even if we're all wise, even if we all are knowledgeable, there's a mitzvah to recount the story. And it says, V'chol hamar belasapir, the more you talk about it, the more you talk about it, even the whole night, hareze meshubach, it is praiseworthy. Actually, there's an interesting translation, I think, from the Altar of Slobodka. Most of us translate the phrase, the more you talk about it, it is praiseworthy. But the Altar of Slobodka tightens up this way. The more you talk about it, the more praiseworthy you become. And he makes a very interesting point. This is a very interesting issue. The Chavis Olavavis actually made the issue earlier. The Chavis Olavavis made the point that sometimes things that we are exposed to as children remain in our minds in a childish way. It's kind of a torn issue, because on one hand, you know, you want to teach your children things. And of course, you have to. On the other hand, that which they hear as kids becomes fixed in their mind, the way Avram, Yitzchak, Avos. And that sometimes makes it harder to take a fresh look at it and understand things at a deeper level. Again, it's a bit of a contradiction, because that almost kind of says, don't teach your kids about Bereishis, because let them see it as an adult.
Is that many?
Yeah.
Well,
they started with Vayikra, but maybe that was the reason. But
that's
very interesting. Chazal give a different reason. Chazal say because it's pure and you want children to learn purity. But maybe you have something there. Maybe there is a svar that you want to start Bereishis older, because the stories of Bereishis are very susceptible to immature understandings. Rav Huttner even said an amazing thing. Rav Huttner says that he never really mastered Bava Metzia, which is a very hard masechta, but it's one of the early masechtas that we start learning with our children in fifth grade or sixth grade. He says he has a fifth grade understanding. He couldn't get beyond it. Okay, again, it's a very interesting issue. But based on this, so the Altar of Slobodka says, that's why the Haggadah makes the point that no matter how wise you are, you got to keep on going over the story over and over and over again, because sometimes only by constantly going over it do you get to see the new insights that escapes you because you're so used to it. Meaning, the constant, so that's the idea of Harezeh Meshubah, you become praiseworthy because you can leave the childish conception of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But be it as it may, the Haggadah does make the assertion, the more you do, the better. Now, the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is a proof to that. Why is that so? Because the following. If there wouldn't be a mitzvah of Zechira at night the whole year, meaning, if the mitzvah of Zechira the whole year would be in the day, you know, as if you say like that, and comes Pesach night and says, you got to make a Haggadah, what I might have thought is this. The same thing I do the whole year during the day is what I have to do Pesach night. One sentence. We'll explain why. I mean, we have to explain why. Yeah. In other words, if the mitzvah of Zechira the whole year would only be in the day and not at night, and comes the mitzvah of Haggadah and says, do it at night, I might have made the following mistake. What is the Torah commanding me to do on this special night? The thing that I normally have to do during the day, during the year, which is one sentence. But by the Haggadah showing you that the mitzvah of that one sentence is every single night of the year, and yet the Torah gave you a mitzvah of Sipur, that's a proof that the mitzvah of Sipur must go beyond the minimal narrative of one sentence. In other words, in effect, the point is, by establishing that Zechira already applies every single night, that reveals to me that Sipur requires more. Hence, it is a direct proof to call Hamarbe Harezeh Meshuvah. You see why? Because if you were to say that Zechira doesn't apply at night, during the year, so maybe the uniqueness of Pesach night is you got to say something. But it doesn't have to be more than a minimum. But if I know that you have to say the minimum every night anyway, then Sipur got to be beyond the minimum. So, in effect, it's a very good raya to call Hamar Behrezeh Meshuvah. That's the simple answer to this question. But the second question is a more complicated question. And again, the second question says what? Why is it so that Zechira is predominantly in the day, although we have a drasha that we also include the night? Sipur is the dafka in the night. So here the Gemara makes the following point. The Gemara does not explain why Sipur is at night, but the Gemara does explain what the issue of Zechira is. And that is the following. The Jewish people actually left Mitzrayim in the daytime. Right? As soon as the Bechoros died, midnight, Paro immediately said, get out. Paro told them they can and must get out of here at midnight. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not want the Jewish people to leave in the middle of the night as if they're sneaking out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mitzaveh that nobody should leave Mitzrayim until the morning. Right, that's the idea. So they could have left at night, but they didn't leave until the morning. So the Mandiyamar that says you mention Zechira only in the day, Zechira now, simply says, since they didn't leave Mitzrayim until the day, and what you're thanking Hashem for is Yetzias Mitzrayim, so the Iker is the day and not the night. The other Mandiyamar says, well, that's true, the Iker is the day and not the night, but since they could have left Mitzrayim at midnight, so therefore even the night is also meaning secondary, is also a Zman of Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's the Machlokas by Zechira, if I only focus on when they actually left, or I focus on when they could have. By the way, here's a little bit of a question. What do we say? We say that why do we eat matzah? We eat matzah because when our forefathers were making bread, they didn't have time to let their dough rise. They had to bake it right away before it turned chametz. Kabbalistically the reason is because we would have been on the 50th level of Tumah. But in terms of the Chumash itself, Paro said, get out of here, I'm not giving you time to bake the bread. Now, l'chara like this, if they already knew from midnight that they could have left, then why couldn't they bake their bread at night and give it plenty of time to rise? In other words, why do they only start? They start baking their bread in the morning, and then they have no time because Paro kicks them out, when l'chara they already knew from midnight they had 6 hours. Now, you could say, well, people were still eating the Korban Pesach, but that depends. According to one opinion, in fact, this is how we remachmer on, you can only eat the Korban Pesach until Chatzos. Right? That's why we eat the Afikoman before midnight. Now, you may say, well, that sounds funny. Are we suggesting they could have been baking chametz bread during their Seder? The answer is yes. That's exactly what I'm suggesting, because it goes in a circle. The reason why we're not allowed to eat chametz is because they didn't have time to let their dough rise. Meaning, Had they had time to let their dough rise, it could have been chametz. Wow, that would have made Pesach so much easier. But the thing is, so yeah, in other words, you can't ask, gee, how could they have chametz? Well, I mean, the next morning was also Pesach, and yet the Torah clearly tells us, actually not clearly, because it's a machlokes how to learn the psukim, but the simple meaning of the psukim is that had they been given time, they would have been permitted to have chametz. It's only because of this not having time that we don't eat chametz, right? So it's a good question. Why couldn't they start baking their bread at midnight? Yeah.
I never got a sense, you know, that there was challenge. My God's only tied
it. Right.
She, and Moshe said to Paro when everything was going to happen, but did they know that Moshe said to them, they know we are leaving tomorrow? I mean,
in other words, did they know the night before that they would be leaving?
Did they know that whole week leading up? I mean, they were doing all these things, but did they?
Yeah.
Did they have, like, you know, the schedule? Did they promise them that we're
going to be? Did they know at midnight that they were leaving?
Not even at midnight. Did they know, like, when they tried to cover Pesach to the bed 3 days earlier?
It's not clear that they knew that the redemption would be this week. They loved Afghan knew. On the other hand, by midnight they knew because they were told to leave. And then Hashem had told them, no person shall leave their house before the morning. By the way, this thing about matzah is a very, very complicated show. This is another example of things we hear as kids. But when you learn the psukim, it's very, very complicated. Because on one hand, we're making the claim that the reason we eat matzah is because they didn't have time to let their dough rise, implying that they could have made chametz had they wanted to and had they had the time. And yet we find that before they even brought the Korban Pesach, they're told you can't eat chametz. Before that, right? Before that. So how can we say that the reason why their bread was matzah is because they didn't have time to let their dough rise if they were already told they couldn't have chametz? Meaning they didn't have the choice.
Were they told that they couldn't have chametz?
Well, if you look in the Chumash, we read it last week, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them the mitzvahs of the Korban Pesach, he says you should eat the Korban Pesach with matzah for 7 days, and also says, and for 7 days you shall not have chametz in your possession. Yeah. So what's going on? If for 7 days,
yeah.
Oh yeah, but see, those are two different things. Meaning to say like this, Amida, I admit that they're supposed to eat matzah with the Korban Pesach. That's true. They had to have matzah. And of course, the question is, what was the reason for that matzah?
Could the matzah have been leavened,
though? Well, no, matzah seems to be unleavened. But on the other hand, just because you have to eat matzah doesn't automatically mean you can't have chametz either. The raya is Pesach Sheni. If a person is unable to bring a Korban Pesach the 14th of Nisan, he brings a Korban Pesach the 14th of Iyar, he has matzah with it, and he can have chametz too. Right? So one thing doesn't mean the other. On the other hand, the kasha is that in that parsha, it doesn't only say you have to eat matzah, it says you're not allowed to have chametz. Lo bal yiroya bal yimatzah. So the whole thing is a very, very circular thing. They're already told they're not allowed to have chametz. Now,
what time did that start?
Well, they were... that's the question. But on the other hand, so you can't say they could have let their dough rise and become chametzdik if they weren't allowed to have chametz. So the way the Ran interprets it is the following. When Hashem said, and if you look at the psukim, it's meduyik. When Hashem said, for 7 days you're not allowed to own chametz, that was a tzivoy that was not to become operative till they got to Eretz Yisrael. So Hashem is kind of telling them the future, that when you get to Eretz Yisrael, you will not be allowed to eat chametz for 7 days. Now Hashem didn't tell them the reason for that. The reason was an event that happened the next morning. In other words, the concept is the following. It's as if they're told ahead of time, when you get to Eretz Yisrael, you are not allowed to eat chametz. Now you are allowed to eat chametz, even though you have to have matzah with the Korban Pesach. Now, since right now they're allowed to eat chametz, so the next morning when they bake their bread, right, they don't know any reasons. They just know that when we get to Eretz Yisrael, we got this new thing called chametz. The next morning when they bake their bread, therefore, they would be allowed to let their dough rise and become chametz, but they were not able to do so because the Egyptians kicked them out. And in effect, Hashem says, now you understand why I commanded you not to eat chametz, to remember the fact that your dough couldn't rise. Now, I should qualify that. The Ran does say that in Mitzrayim, the eating of chametz was usher the first day of Pesach, meaning you couldn't eat chametz the night of the Seder, and you couldn't eat chametz the next day, but there was no iser of Baal Yeroy or Baal Yematzeh, so they were allowed that year to bake chametz on the first day of Pesach in order to eat it for the next day of Pesach. So in the, yeah, they had man, but the Ran is mashma, based on the Gemara, that the iser of chametz did not take effect until they entered Eretz Yisrael. And Pesach Mitzrayim, it was only usher for the first day of Pesach. Yeah.
Why they couldn't bake it at night then?
Yeah, no, so, it's a good question. I don't have an answer to that question.
They couldn't eat the chametz the first day.
First day, but they could bake it the first day for the second day. And that's why they could have left.
As they were leaving
in the morning. So they couldn't have eaten it that day, but they could bake it for the next day. Of course, you can ask another question. L'chayra, like this. Let's ask a Hilchas Yomtiv question. If, in fact, they're not allowed to eat chametz that day, but they are baking it to eat the next day, and there's no issue of owning chametz then. But isn't that a problem of hachana, right? You're not allowed to bake on one day of Yom Tov for the next day of Yom Tov. Well, it wasn't the next day of Yom Tov, but you're not... Yeah, no, it's even worse. You're not allowed to bake on Yom Tov for a weekday. Yeah, it's Yom Tov l'chol. I mean, there'd be a problem of hachana. Okay, that's a difficult question. It could be that until Matan Torah, that halacha didn't apply either. But you see, it's a lot of problems. There's a lot of circularity. And then, of course, we could ask the question, well, wait a second. If we eat matzah to commemorate the fact that we were kicked out of Egypt very quickly, then what would the reason be they ate matzah the night before with the Korban Pesach? That didn't happen yet. You see? in other words, good, we answered that there was no problem with chametz. But what was the significance of their eating matzah? So the Ramban points out that you have to say that matzah really has two reasons. Matzah does not have one reason. Matzah has two reasons. And this is even in the Haggadah, because when we begin the Haggadah, we say, Ha lachma anya, this is the bread of poverty. Meaning matzah is called lechem oni, poor bread. Why is it called poor bread? Because when people were slaves, they ate matzah. Matzah is the bread of slaves. Why is matzah the bread of slaves? So there are two reasons that are given. One is because when you're a slave, you're not given time to bake your bread, so it's kind of rush, rush, rush. And the other reason is that matzah stays in the stomach a long time, and therefore masters liked for their slaves to eat matzah because they wouldn't eat too much other food. The Ibn Ezra writes that when he was in India, Ibn Ezra was a traveler, he noticed that slaves were being fed unleavened bread, matzah. So the point is this. So one reason why we eat matzah is not because of the geula. We eat matzah to commemorate slavery and affliction. The other reason to eat matzah is it's a commemoration of the geula. So it turns out, the Abravanel writes, that the first night they ate matzah, the first Seder, was not because of the sign of redemption. It was to remember the slavery and the servitude. It is only, and that's why Rabban Gamliel says, Rabban Gamliel is the one that adds the reason, based on the pasuk, that we didn't have time to let our dough rise, so the Abravanel's medayek. Matzah zu sha'anu ochlim. The matzah that we eat, what is the reason? Meaning to say like this, the matzah they ate the first Seder was not because their dough couldn't rise, because when that happened, that didn't happen yet. So their eating was only lechem oni. But when we eat matzah, we now have the additional reason that is nischadesh, that is a commemoration of freedom and redemption. Yeah.
I think that
well, okay, you know, these are already interpretations. In other words, the pasuk says, the pasuk says, Lo hispik, or Rabban Gamliel says, Lo hispik betseikam lahachmetz. Their dough was unable to rise. So there might be different interpretations. The simple meaning is that this was an expression of chipazon. They had to leave so quickly. Others, Alpi Kabbalah, could interpret it that way as well. that chametz, which is a remnant to the Yetzer Hara, had no makom in Klal Yisrael that moment. Right? It's very, very significant that even biologically or physically, matzah cannot spoil. In other words, flour and water will spoil only after the fermentation process occurs. Only chametz gives it the capacity to be spoiled. That's why, you know, they find matzah in Mitzrayim and they can still eat it. I mean, they find matzah that's 2,000 years old. And, you know, it is edible. It is edible. Matzah does... Well, yeah, some of the matzah we get might be from the side, I don't know. But the point is, it's never spoiled. It never really spoiled. It gets a little stale sometimes, but it's always, always edible. But bread, of course, it gets moldy and spoils because, once again, that's symbolic of the fact that chametz is the Yetzer Hara. So there is a pshat that says lehispik b'tzeika means that it just couldn't turn into chametz. But that's not the mainstream. I mean, the mainstream, the Ramban and Rashi, all of them understand that it could have become chametz, but they were not able to make it chametz because they had to leave Mitzrayim right away. But the point, therefore, is that because of that maisa, matzah acquired an additional reason which was not the original kavana in the achilas matzah. Yeah. Oh, very excellent question. And here there's a horror of the Maral. Well, the question is, shouldn't we eat chametz? You're saying, why do we eat chametz the whole year? Right, that's right. And the Maral asks your question and goes a little further. The Maral says, you know, we come to Shavuos. Shavuos is the day of Matan Torah, and the korban that is brought on Shavuos to the Beis HaMikdash are two loaves of wheat bread. Two loaves of wheat, which are called shtei halechem, and the shtei halechem bidafka have to be chametz. Now this is unusual because normally in the Beis HaMikdash, even the whole year, you don't bring meal offerings that are chametz. In other words, chametz is generally kept out of the Beis HaMikdash even during the year. The lechem apanim, for example. See, people get confused because we always say lechem is bread, so we have this thought that, you know, this was chametz. The showbread, the lechem apanim, was matzah. It was not chametz. It was very thick matzah. We're not used to it. It was a tefach thick. Imagine a 4-inch thick matzah. But it had to be matzah. Okay? So chametz is normally kept out of the Beis HaMikdash. And the only korban in the whole Beis HaMikdash that is chametz, well, there are two. One is the Thanksgiving offering, the korban todah, had some bread that was chametz, which is why we don't say Mizmor L'Soda on Erev Pesach, because that was the song that you said with a korban toda. But that's a private korban. But in terms of a public korban, the only public korban that had chametz in it was the Shtei Halechem. So the Maral asks, if chametz is Yetzer Hara, and chametz is bad, and chametz is evil, and in the Beis HaMikdash you normally don't bring it anyway, so why for Shavuos do we bring the Shtei Halechem? And the Maral says, now let's see if this may not answer your question directly, but let's see if it brings us a little closer. The Maral says that the whole purpose of Torah is to teach us how to take even our animalistic drives and even our materialism and elevate it to Kedusha. In other words, the Torah does not teach you to fast, not to eat, not to get married, not to have possessions. The Torah says that even the physical taivas of a human being that could normally lead a person to ra, when there's taira, that could give you guidance and hadracha and transformation. And consequently, the Maral says that Pesach, which is pure freedom, we got to banish our Yetzer Hara, because if you combine freedom with Yetzer Hara, that's going to be very, very destructive. But when that freedom has been tamed and controlled and directed by Kabbalah Satorah, then even the Yetzer Hara itself can become transformed into something good. Not only that, the Maral says, but you know why chametz comes in? Because like this, the Gemara says that the Malachi Asheres didn't want that the human beings to get a Torah. They said, why should you waste your Torah on human beings? And what was Moshe Rabbeinu's answer? This is an ingenious answer the Maral gives. Moshe Rabbeinu's answer was, angels, you don't need the Torah, because you don't have the Yetzer Hara. So it turns out, our whole claim to the Torah is because we have the Yetzer Hara. So the Yetzer Hara kind of says, you got to bring me in. Hashem after all. I'm the whole reason Hashem gave you a Torah. So how can you exclude me from the table? I'm the cause. You see? Consequently, when it comes to Matan Torah, the Yetzer Hara has a share in our Torah, because that's the only reason why we get it instead of the angels. Now, this doesn't fully answer your question. You're asking about the whole year, but it could very well be that, number one, the following. Number one, something that you keep away from the whole year does not have the symbolic impression on your neshama. Meaning to say, if you wouldn't eat bread the whole year, you would not think of it as an action of eradicating the Yetzer Hara. You would just say, I don't eat bread. You know, it's like every yomtiv. Like, why don't you keep a yomtiv? Why don't you keep Shabbos every day, right? The answer is that certain zamanim are mashpia on us only because they're special, they're unique, and they give us lessons that we carry with us the whole year. You see? If you do it the whole year, it doesn't have that reishim on you. You get used to it. Like the Gemara says, anybody who says Hallel the whole year is considered to be a blasphemer. Because if you constantly say Hallel, 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 then it fails to move you to be Meshabeach Hashem properly. And the other idea might be as well that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want us normally to totally reject the Yetzer Hara. Rather, he wants us to take the Yetzer Hara and elevate it. But on Pesach, we're more conscious of how we have to control it and defeat it. Yeah, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. What was I? Can you just redirect me? Yeah. Oh, matzah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Right, right, that's the stay halachim. Right, right, right. But it does turn out that the matzah of the first Seder, the first time they ate, is not for the same reason as the matzah that we eat all the time. Right? So that's an interesting point. Matzah has multiple reasons. Yeah. The way the Ran understands it is that for that first Pesach in Mitzrayim, they were not allowed to eat chametz for the first day, the night and the day, but they were allowed to own or make chametz. Consequently, the Ran says they theoretically would have been able to let their dough rise on day one for eating on day two. And again, it's very mediocre, because even though it's true that the issue of owning chametz was stated before, but if you look at the pasuk, it seems to imply when you get to Eretz Yisrael. So the way it was is, Hashem told them, when you get to Eretz Yisrael, no chametz for 7 days. But they didn't know why. The next morning, when they're trying to make their chametz and they can't let it rise, now they understand, because of this did Hashem tell me that we cannot eat chametz for the 7 days. In other words, the mitzvah was given before the reason, in anticipation of a reason that would materialize the next day. Okay, but that's the idea of matzah, that matzah does have two tamim. It is lechem oni, and it is chipazon. Actually, I'm thinking this might be a reason, this might be a hesber for the another shita of the Maharal. The Maharal has a very interesting shita in halacha. You know, the halacha is that you're not yotzei the Seder with egg matzah. Now, what is egg matzah? Egg matzah just means matzah with either has egg yolks or fruit juice. And that includes all this stuff, grape matzah, all these different things. Now, the truth of the matter is, unless you're a chola or a zake, you're not even allowed to eat egg matzah anyway. But let's assume that a person is a chola or a zake, and he qualifies, he could eat egg matzah. But for the Seder, he is not yotzei with egg matzah. You cannot fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah with egg matzah. Better to have matzah meal, just ground up matzah and take it in a spoon with water, but one is not yotzei with egg matzah. Why is one not yotzei with egg matzah? Because the Torah describes matzah as lechem oni, poor bread, and poor bread means the type of bread that a poor person would eat who only has flour and water. And this is not poor bread, this is rich bread. This is what it's called, matzah ashira, rich bread with eggs and with juice, and therefore it is not lechem oni. And that's the halacha. One is not yotzei the mitzvah of achilas matzah on Pesach, during the Seder, with matzah ashira. Now based on that, we have a kula, by the way, there's a kula based on that. And that is, you know, Erev Pesach, one is not allowed to eat matzah. Some people have a minhag that they stop eating matzah from Purim. And many people have a minhag they stop eating matzah from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, tomorrow. But according to the strict halacha, you're allowed to eat matzah until Erev Pesach. Once it's the morning of Erev Pesach, I'm not allowed to eat matzah. We also know I'm only allowed to eat chametz the first 4 hours of the day. So the morning of Erev Pesach, I can eat chametz and not matzah. And after 4 hours, I can eat neither chametz nor matzah. Right? So it's funny. So Erev Pesach in the morning, matzah is more usher than chametz. Chametz you could still eat, matzah you cannot eat. Right? So that's a good brain teaser. You know, when is matzah forbidden and chametz permitted? Erev Pesach, 4 hours of the morning. Whatever it goes, 10:30, whatever the time is. Now, here is the thing. Are you allowed to eat egg matzah on Erev Pesach? So, let's assume that it's before it's usher to eat chametz, because again, let's assume that you're either a chola or a zakeh. So, we paskin yes. Why? Because the Easter of eating matzah on Erev Pesach is only not to eat the type of matzah that would be kosher for the Seder. In other words, that which is kosher for the Seder, you're not allowed to eat on Erev Pesach. But matzah ashira, which is pasul for the Seder, because it's not lechem oni, you would be allowed to eat it. That's why we say sometimes there's always a question when there's a tainis b'chayrim, a fast of the firstborn, in the morning. So the question becomes, what do you eat at the siyum, right? They make a siyum in order that the people should be able to eat. So what do you serve? You can't serve matzah, because you can't eat matzah on Erev Pesach. Chametz you could serve, but people in a shul or whatever don't want to serve chametz because it gets crumbled and everything else. And potato starch things are shahakol, so a siyum requires a mezonos. So some might, you know, so you could have matzah meal cookies would be a possibility if you eat them. Or egg matzah is a possibility, because egg matzah is not chametz, or even if it is chametz, but it's the type of chametz that is not real chametz, even though our minhag is not to eat it, so crumbling is not such a fear. But b'ikar, it's not matzah, it's not nichlal in the yisur of matzah. This is how we paskin. But the Maral of Prague has a very interesting halakha. The Maral of Prague says you're not allowed to eat egg matzah on Erev Pesach. Why is this so? Because the Maral says that if b'dieved, if the only matzah a person had at his Seder was egg matzah, he would be yotze. Why? Because just because it's not lechem oni doesn't mean it's not matzah. Meaning it's two different things. Meaning the Torah does say you should eat matzah, number one, and your matzah should be lechem oni, number two. So the Maral says, even if I don't fulfill the lechem oni part of it, I still fulfill the matzah part of it. Now the Maral says, see, most people learn that lechem oni is a definition of what is halakhic matzah for the Seder. If it's not lechem oni, it's not called matzah. It's not chametz, but it's not called matzah. The Maral says, no, two different things. There's matzah. There's a matzah requirement. There's a lechem oni requirement. Matzah ashira flunks the lechem oni requirement, but it still passes the matzah requirement. Therefore, b'dieved, I could be yotze matzah the Seder night. And since b'dieved, I might be yotze matzah, I'm not allowed to eat at Erev Pesach. Now, how do you understand the Maral? So it could very well be that if you understand that in the union of matzah, there are two separate ideas. Matzah is a commemoration of slavery, and it's a celebration of freedom. So now we understand it this way. The chisaron of matzah ashira is, it's not the bread of slavery. But it's still matzah, because if it didn't rise, you're still celebrating the redemption. So the Maral's argument is, just because you're not fulfilling both ideas of matzah, doesn't mean you can't fulfill one idea of matzah, right? That's exactly might be the hesber of the maral. Okay. But be it as it may, I still want to get back to how this answers the Sipur and Zechira issue. And the way it is the following. It is true, we did not leave Mitzrayim until the morning. So it all depends on what you're focusing on. We left Mitzrayim in the morning. But when did Mitzrayim leave us? When did we become spiritually liberated? When did we become free internally? Because we broke that foreign avodah zarah that contaminated our neshama. The answer is that was at night. Because what happened at night? At night was the eating of the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach was the god, the lamb was the god of Mitzrayim. So in effect, it all depends on what you're commemorating when we talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim. Are you commemorating the physical redemption? Or are you commemorating the spiritual transformation? So during the year, our mitzvah is to remember the historical event of the Exodus. The historical event of the Exodus was the Hashem took us out of Egypt. So that happened in the day. So the day is more significant, and the night we could have left, so that's secondary. But Pesach night, the point of Sipur is not so much to focus on the physical redemption, but it is to focus on the spiritual transformation of becoming Am Hashem. Yeah, I'll get to a second. We became Am Hashem at night. And consequently, when it comes to Sipur, everybody's moda that the Haggadah is at night. And in fact, there's a the thing is clicking. I don't know if it stops. Galus is a remez to night, hester panim, concealment. Making a seder at night, in effect, is making the statement to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that even when my life is dark, even when there's persecution, even when there's affliction, even if one is in a concentration camp, one still can have an inner sense of freedom by being connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a very important reminder that Chayrus is not a political issue. Chayrus is an internal, spiritual issue. One can be totally a slave to the outside world, but inside, their panemius is free. And that's why, you know, people in a concentration camp could make a seder. Because that Chayrus, the Sfasana says, Elashem, that once Hashem liberated us, we could never be a slave again. What does that mean? We could be a slave, certainly, but inside we're not a slave. Inside we're free. Inside we have that kesher to our Kaddish Baruch Hu. And the remez of doing it at night is that we don't care what the external circumstances are. We are not defined by that which is outside of us. We are defined by our panemius, by our internal relationship to our Kaddish Baruch Hu. So that's the aside of why the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is bedafka at night. I'm sorry, do you want to say that?
So if we're commemorating the spiritual and mental freedom from slavery,
right,
didn't that start when Bnei Israel took the lamb, or when Bnei Israel shuffled the lamb?
Right, so you'd actually say that maybe Shabbos HaGadol, that should be the, right, that's when they took the sheep, and the 14th is when they shechted. Yeah, but
that was why I asked you if they knew.
If they knew.
The courage it took.
Right.
If they didn't know,
sure,
it was happening 3 days.
No, it was a great miracle that the Mitzrayim didn't kill them then. Yeah, but I think the answer might be this. The answer might be that they did all these acts, but how do they know that Hashem accepted them as His people? That was seen at midnight, when because of the blood of the Pesach, that open symbol,
Hashem passed over all of the houses of the Jews and none of them died. Meaning to say, we did something, but how do we know that Hashem accepted it as making us His nation? That occurred Pesach night at Chatzos. So Chatzos was HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepting us as His people by virtue of His passing over the their houses.
But I would think that the spiritual freedom would come when they completely renounced. They effectively did renounce,
yes,
the giant by killing the sheep. So I, yep, mean, that seems sort of the end at Africa.
That's what we did. In other words,
and yeah. Africa.
Well, once again, well, yeah, but it's not really anticlimactic because a person does many things in their lives, but ultimately they don't know that they've become transformed till they see from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that He's accepted it. It's the acceptance by Hashem that made that transformation into a reality. Otherwise, we did it, but who says, you know, what we do makes a difference? Chatzais showed us what we did made a difference. Right? So that's the idea of the spiritual transformation, which is a different focus than Zechira, which is on the Exodus itself, which is a physical event.
But we say Hallel at night on Pesach, and that's very much the physical.
Well, actually, that's a very interesting point. And by the way, don't we say Hallel in the Haggadah, but Hallel and Haggadah, or, well, that depends. That's Gnazim and Sfardim. Yeah, okay, but certainly, whether you say Hallel and Shul or not, those are many different minhagim, but everybody says Hallel in the Haggadah itself, right? That you have to, but that's not part of the Haggadah. In other words, there's Haggadah, is Sipri, Yetzias, and then there's Hallel as well, kind of coming together. And the Hallel in the Haggadah itself is a very, very interesting phenomenon, because the Hallel is broken up into two parts. We say part of the Hallel before the second cup, and then the rest of the Hallel we say after benching on the fourth cup of wine. And the splitting of the Hallel is very significant. You know, unfortunately, after three cups of wine, people are tired, and usually most of the discussion of the Haggadah takes place before the second cup, and Hallel you're actually not supposed to interrupt, so there's a lot of just plain recitation, so people don't pay attention, and unfortunately in lesser religious audiences, people often leave after the meal. Hallel, you know, all that stuff, they don't even bother to say. But there's something very beautiful and very special about this Hallel, even more so than the Hallel the rest of the year. And that is, the reason why the Hallel is split is because the Hallel that you, the chapters that you recite before the meal refer to thanking Hashem for Yetzias Mitzrayim. We talk about the Yamsuf, Malacha, Hayam, Kisanas, etc. But the Hallel after the meal is no longer about Pesach at all. It is looking to the future redemption. It is looking to Mashiach. It is looking to Tchias HaMesim. It is the affirmation of the belief that just as we were redeemed in Nisan, Nisan will be the month of the future Geula as well. That doesn't mean Mashiach can't come any day. Of course it could, but it's the official Zman. It's official time. If we don't make it earlier, is some Nisan. Like they say that Rav Moshe Feinstein was always very excited when Nisan came, not because of Pesach only, but because this is the month of Mashiach. And Shabbos Mevorach in Iyar, he was despondent, because he says there aren't too many days left, you know. Nisan is the month of Geula. Nisan is the month of redemption. And that second Hallel, we're not even thinking about Mitzrayim anymore. We've already been liberated from Mitzrayim. Our mind is focusing on that future redemption. And there's a beautiful diyuk to this effect. Maybe you've noticed it grammatically. Before we begin that first Hallel, the first two kapitlach of Hallel, we say, V'nomar lefanav shira chadasha. Let us say before Hashem a new song, Shira Chadasha. So first of all, why is Hallel called Shira Chadasha? It's not a new song, it's a pretty old song. The answer is, of course, since each of us has to personally experience as if we're being taken out of Mitzrayim, so we should say Hallel as if it's something that's happening to us right now. It's a Shira Chadasha. That's why it says Chadasha. That's fine. However, you'll notice that it expresses it B'lashon Nekeva, feminine, Shira Chadasha. By the blessing of the second kais, right before we end that part of the Seder, we talk about Hashem should rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, and we should be able to bring a Korban Pesach. And it says, V'nodelecha Shir Chadash. And then we will give you a Shir Chadash. Also a new song. The English would translate it exactly the same. But how come that's Lashon Zachar when the Shira Chadasha is a Lashon Nekeva? You also find in davening, when we say Mi Kamocha, right, all that, we say Shira Chadasha Shibchu Ge'ulim, they sang you a new song, Lashon Nekeva, referring to Kriyas Yamsuf. And in the Tzur Mishalov, Friday night, it says, Yibada HaMikdash, right, rebuild the Mikdash, V'sham Nashir Shir Chadash. And then we will sing you a Shir Chadash, that's a Lashon Zachar. So you see a pattern. The pattern is, whenever we talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim, we use a Lashon Nekeva. And when we talk about Yemosa Mashiach, we use a Lashon Zachar, Shir Chadash. So Taisus and Pesachim brings the idea that just like a woman after childbirth, besides the pains before childbirth, but after childbirth, there is often discomfort and a certain amount of suffering. So the geulos of this world, which are followed by tribulation and pain, we use it b'lasha nekeva, because every redemption is like a birth. No, everything is Mashiach is also preceded by tribulation and pain, and that's not a differentiation. But the idea is that there is also pain after birth. There is pain and discomfort after birth to some degree, and therefore every geula in Olam Hazeh, that in addition to being preceded by great suffering, even afterwards there's going to be some travail. That's a lashon nekeva. But Yemosa Mashiach, although there will be indeed tremendous suffering before Mashiach comes, that's the Chavli Mashiach, but with that Geula there will not be suffering and adversity, and therefore that's a Shir Chadash. That is like the man who, as you know, I mean, who does not suffer physically, at least from the birth of a child. That is all a woman's suffering, as it were. Yeah.
There's another question somebody's pointing out. The Mashiach comes, you very hard to get the Golas out of us. But he'll be able to take us out of Golas, because we have to get
Golas out
of us. It sounds like when Mashiach comes, everything's going to be so great. Things are going to be done, and there's not going to be any suffering.
Well, what it means is, once Mashiach comes, there's not going to be another Golos or another Chorban Beis HaMikdash. That's what we're referring to. The Umos HaOlam are not going to afflict us. However, we may still have Bechira. In fact, it's brought, hopefully we will still have Bechira. It's brought down that many Jews, when Mashiach comes, are not going to want to go to Eretz Yisrael anyway. They'll be happy here. I mean, look at it during the Bayis Sheni. So Ezra and Nehemiah came, they built the Bayis Sheni. Most of the Jews lived in Golis. They didn't want to come back. Of course, there, that's more excusable than today, because there, if you read Ezra and Nehemiah, you see how difficult living in Eretz Yisrael was. I mean, the Yerushalayim was totally burnt, and they had to reach the rubble and piles of debris. It was very, very physically hard. But, you know, today, it isn't that hard, and certainly when Mashiach comes, it'll be less hard. And yet, Chazal say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to have to come and drag us there, because many people will say, well, I'll come for Pesach, I'll bring my Korban Pesach and Shavuos and Sukkot. What's wrong if I live in Chutz La'aretz the rest of the year? So in that sense, it'll be very hard to get the Golus out of us. But in terms of Shibud, in terms of what other nations will do to us, when Mashiach comes, there will not be war, there will not be Chorban again, the Bayis HaShlishi will never be destroyed. Right, so in that sense, there is no pain that will follow the coming of Mashiach.
But we'll still have free choice, which means that we'll still have the pain of Yisrael.
Yeah, the pain of our self-inflicted pain we might have that you can't avoid. That's the that. But we keep in mind, though, it's a very complicated issue, you know, because it really goes back. Well, it really goes back to Adam Arishon Kaidem Achet, because we say like this. We say, Adam Arishon Kaidem Achet did not have the internalized Yetzer Hara. Now, one question is, well, if there was no Yetzer Hara, how could he commit a chait to begin with, right? What was the Yetzer Hara that made him commit the chait, right? So the Mefarshim say, there was a force of Ra in the world that could influence you, but the Ra was outside of him in the sense of a nachash, as a force, as opposed to internal. Even that is very shvir, because if there literally is no internal force, then what is my receptivity to the outer force? In other words, how is this outer force influencing me unless there's some Ra? But be it as it may, it was less attenuated. But more basically, the question is, if the whole godless Adam is to struggle against evil and to surmount it, then what's so great about somebody who didn't have a Yetzer Hara? Why is that a godless bechlal? What would the Avaida have been? Remember, you know, because there's a medrash that says that had Adam HaRishon just waited until Shabbos, the Eitz Hadas would have been permitted. Meaning, what was it? He was created towards the end of Friday afternoon. He just had to wait. Now, the question we have to ask is this. So what would his tachlis have been? Meaning, all he had was one mitzvah. Or Chazal say actually he had the other mitzvahs b'nei noyach as well. Believe in Hashem, obviously. Shabbos comes. He's allowed to eat the Eitz Hadas. So what is the purpose? What and he would live forever. What would the purpose of such a person have been? Right? What would the tachlis have been? What would the struggle have been? What is he supposed to think about when he wakes up in the morning? What am I to do today? So the answer has to be that struggle exists on many, many levels, on infinite levels. There is the struggle between bad and good. And then there is the struggle between good and better. And vis-a-vis the better, the good becomes the bad. And better and excellent, vis-a-vis the excellent, the better becomes the bad. Meaning to say that just like, I mean, we even see this in this world, right? There are people who have to struggle not to kill somebody. Right? But that wouldn't be a struggle that I think, Baruch Hashem, most of you would have. And we may struggle against the Lashon Hara, and there are people who may not have to struggle against that. So what is the struggle, right? But there's always a struggle. Hashem is infinite. So no matter how great Adam HaRishon was, no matter how great, even Adam HaRishon Kaidam HaChait, his life would be a struggle to try to be misbainain and be makasher in the Atzmius, the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, in effect, it's a semantic redefinition. So evil would have been defined not as a Yetzer Hara to shoot somebody, or not as a Yetzer Hara to rebel against Hashem, but the Yetzer Hara of not striving to reach the level of Dveikus that I'm able to reach. You see? So I think it would be impossible that Hashem envisioned a world in which there would not be struggle. Remember, that's the whole thesis of the Derech Hashem, that Hashem's purpose is to give us good, but to give us the good without the struggle would be Nahama de Kisufa, the bread of shame and humiliation. So Hashem created a world, so we struggle. So the question you'll ask is, but yes, but if Adam HaRishon wouldn't have done the chait, there wouldn't have been the struggle. The answer, there would have been a struggle on a different plane. A plane that we can't even reach because we're struggling to get out of the pit. Right? We're not even on the ground. We're in a pit. Adam HaRishon would not have been in the pit. He would have been on top of the ground. But you still have to struggle to Shammai, right? So, yeah. I'm sorry.
Because I have to leave, I wanted to establish that Tuesday will be Tuesday the 11th. Is okay?
Tuesday night.
No, I'm talking about.
May the 11th. Yeah, that should be okay.
I'm sorry,
this is May 11th.
No, April.
I mean next Tuesday.
Yeah, next Tuesday.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting mixed up because
yes.
The call I got from your daughter, I thought was May 11th.
No, it was April. Yes.
Okay, it was actually April 11th.
Yes, right next
to. Okay.
But we missed.
No, I understand, but she told me May 11th, so it's different.
Sorry,
okay, I thought it was an after Pesach thing.
So you want to have shiur next Tuesday?
Because Wednesday is already.
In other words, you want to have a Wednesday shiur on Tuesday.
Yeah, because Wednesday is vacation already.
Yeah. All right. So this is a little more complicated because. I'm not free on Tuesday till around 3 p.m.
Oh, I see. Then it won't work.
Yeah. So it couldn't. I wouldn't be able to do it in the morning.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. But all right. Say it.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I told you that May 11th was the date.
Yeah,
all right,
then
no one
mixed up. Okay. I faxed something in this morning, but it may have been
okay,
up to you.
Okay. Sorry. I mean, I'm available after 3, but that's not in the morning. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
If some of the students want to start with their project for the year, if you can outline their
assignment. Okay, I'll think of something. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Questions for Lachlan?
You too. Yeah.
Then I assume we need to drive us to Eretz Yisrael. Are you talking about, there's a question about that.
Yeah.
Is he going to have to drag most of us there? Do we have the free choice not to go? Is it going to be like 1 in 5 Jews going to Eretz
Yisrael? Yeah, I don't know. And you have to understand, too, that any Maimer Chazal about the days of Mashiach doesn't tell you exactly what point that is. Is that the beginning? Because Mashiach's revelation is a process that can take time and can extend over years. So things might be at the beginning, which may not be at the end, etc. The only thing Chazal say is there are some Jews who will not want to go. Doesn't say majority, it's some.
And they'll have the freedom not to go.
Well, it's much, but they don't have the freedom because it says Hashem will come and drag them. So coming and dragging them implies they're going to go whether they like it or not.
Is there a source that says anything about some Jews not being a part of the redemption?
Well, some say that just like in Mitzrayim, right? It says 4/5 of the Jews died during the plague of darkness. Now the question is, what does that mean? 4/5 of the Jews died during the plague of darkness. Only 1/5 of the Jews left. And some say in the Medrash, only 1/50th of the Jews left. 49/50ths. 98% of the Jewish population died. Now, the way some interpret that is, they had reached the 50th level of Tuma. And they were not redeemable. And maybe they didn't know they were Jewish. They also refer to the intermarriage and assimilation. So, in that sense...
Well,
it depends how you learn. Yeah, I understand. Chazal say they didn't marry women, but again, the way you can interpret that is, that refers to the 1/5 that were redeemed. The merit of the 1/5 that were redeemed is they didn't do any of those things. But Lagabi, the 4/5, they could have been guilty of everything, right? In that sense. So, the question is, you know, will the same thing happen? Well, maybe the same thing has already happened, right? If you consider how many Jews have been lost from the Jewish people. Right, they marry a non-Jewish woman and the children are goyim, etc. So in a sense, those are lost, those may be lost forever. Because they become goyim. They've literally become goyim through the transmission.
So does everyone hold the only 1/5 left in Mitzrayim?
Well, other than the Medrash that says 1/50th left in Mitzrayim. And there's even one that says 1/500th left in Mitzrayim. If you imagine how big the population must have been. In other words, is there anyone that says more left?
Yeah.
Well, it depends how you're medayik, because the problem is there's a word in the Chumash that says v'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael. So one translation of chamushim is 1/5, one translation is 1/50th, one translation is 1/500th, and the other translation is they left well armed. So you might say the one that translates it well armed does not translate it to be 1/5, but he doesn't make a specific statement that I believe everybody left. I mean, you could maybe say that by inference, by the fact that he doesn't use the other explanations. But there's no explicit statement that says more than 1/5 left.
There's no mourning mentioned, but it doesn't seem like the people who left mourned the people who didn't leave.
Yeah.
Leaving over a progression of, you know, 200 and some years that they were there.
Yeah.
Is that...
Well, some learn that when it says they died in the plague of darkness, it does not refer in 3 days so many people died. But darkness is a symbol for ignorance and apathy, and it occurred gradually over 210 years. But it's a very good question. Why don't we mourn for them more? Because, you see, Pesach, we even mourn for the Egyptians, right? When we recite the Ten Makos, we pour out our wine. B'nefoloi avecha al tismach, do not rejoice in the downfall of your enemy. We don't say a whole Hallel during Chol HaMoed and even the last days of Pesach because we don't want to celebrate the downfall of Egyptians, right? So we even have a certain amount of sadness for their suffering, and yet we don't really mention or mourn over the Jews who died or were assimilated or were lost. It's a good observation.
Okay.
Yeah. I heard an answer on that one time, that you're looking for pearls in the sand, and you sit through and you find rocks, and you throw those rocks away. After you finish and you take your pearls, you don't feel sad, you just like throw those rocks away. You don't sit down and count them and like dwell.
Then why do we mourn for the Egyptians?
No, but the thing is this. See, I understand that, but that's a kind of a harsh way of saying it, because the idea was that every Jew was potentially a soul that could have been very, very beloved to Hashem. And if a Jew gets thrown away like a rock, we should feel, like today. You look at most of the Jews in the world who don't have a connection to Torah. We would not say, well, they're only the rocks and we're the pearls. Our obligation is to feel a tremendous amount of tsar that we can't do more to bring them, right, back to Klal Yisrael. I mean, we're very hardly perfect either. That's not that only we're pearls, but whatever, maybe we're costume jewelry or something, but, you know, or fake pearls, right. But certainly the attitude wouldn't be one of, oh, they got what's coming to them, you know, that's fine, who cares about them? There would have to be that very deep sense of avelus for that. Of course, they ask Akasha, you know, it's interesting, that on one hand, the Malachim were told not to praise Hashem during Kriyas Yamsuf because he says, my creatures are drowning, don't praise me. And yet, we do say Hallel. We say a half Hallel, but we still say Hallel. So the Chiluk is Pasha. The Chiluk basically is, we have to say something because we were saved. In other words, when Hashem does a Tova for you, you can't just say, I'm not going to praise you. But the angels were not saved. They were just giving praise. So Hashem says, I don't want to be praised when I destroy life. Don't praise me. You can thank me, but don't praise me. In other words, don't praise me in the abstract. So the Malachim were told not to praise. Aber Hakaras HaTayiv, for being saved, that you still have to have. So the half hollow means we don't praise, but we give thanks. That's why it's half hollow. Yeah.
I think all of the Shemas were seen, even
the ones that
could be
lost. Well, that's a good question, because what it says is, every neshama of the future was at Maimed Har Sinai. But you're suggesting that after that would even include the neshamos of the yidden that were that died in Mitzrayim. That I don't know, because it really talks about the neshamos of the future generations. Those that were lost, that were lost.
They were like type of karis or something like
that. It might be a type of karis. Although it's interesting that some say, I'm trying to remember the pasuk. You know, the famous pasuk that says, it's also the song, Uvo ha'ivdim me'eretz Ashur v'hanidachim be'eretz Mitzrayim, that those who were lost in Assyria and those who were pushed away in Mitzrayim shall come to bow down to Hashem in the holy mountain, Yerushalayim, Bahar HaKodesh Yerushalayim. I think that there might be a medrash that says, v'nidachim be'eretz Mitzrayim. Who are those who are pushed away in Eretz Mitzrayim? It might refer to the four-fifths who died. If that's so, I have to check. If that's so, there is a remez that the most Tchias HaMesim, or whatever, they will in fact have a reconnection. But that I have to see, because that's not the Pasuk Pshat. The Pasuk Pshat of the Pasuk, it does not refer to the people who are dead. It refers essentially to Jews who are in exile or being persecuted, etc. We'll be able to come back. Okay, I had more to say. I don't know. I'm a little disappointed that we're not having a share next week. If people want to share, I'm willing. But I understand that if it's too busy, people are too busy. That's also.
I think some of the girls are gone.
Okay, all right.
But those of us who stay,
okay.
Like one. Okay.
Whoever wants an optional share, if you want to raise your hand and don't feel guilty. If you don't want it, don't feel guilty. I fully understand it.
An optional share next week.
Next Wednesday.
Can we do it on Tuesday now?
Yeah, but it has to be Tuesday afternoon. Okay. Actually, that's much better than Wednesday. It's Tuesday. Well, anytime between 3 and 7. No. All right.
Can we do it earlier Wednesday morning right now? Instead of like...
No, I can't do it earlier on Wednesday because I have a class downtown.
I'll just try to work out.
Okay.
And then
Tuesday? You know what?
They can't do it.
Okay.
I could do it either.
Okay. Okay, Karen, if you could just give me a call later. Just go call me in a week later just to work it out. Then. Again, if people can't make it, I certainly understand.
If anybody is interested, so, if they could put their name and number down.
So if I don't see you, I have a good Chag Kashuv Sameach and a good Pesach. You know what they say? We always wish people a Freilich of Purim and a Kashuv Pesach, but the old thing is that for Purim you got to wish people a kosher Purim because of Shalach Manas, and you have to wish people a Freilich of Pesach, but they shouldn't get too uptight over things. So you should have both.